WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Kidnappings, home invasions, and shootouts are some examples of how the violence surrounding the Mexican drug cartels has spilled over into the U.S., particularly in border states. Mexican drug trafficking organizations pose a national security threat to the U.S., according to Attorney General Eric Holder. Today, Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano outlined plans to bolster security on the border. She announced this in advance of Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's visit to Mexico tomorrow. One of the people directly threatened by drug cartel violence is my guest, Alejandro Junco de la Vega. He's the publisher of perhaps the most influential newspaper chain in Mexico, Grupo Reforma. And because his reporters cover the cartels and the drug violence, their lives and his life have been threatened. Junco sent his family across the border to Texas for their safety. It's not the first time he's been in a tough spot. He's run the newspaper chain since 1973. Alejandro Junco, welcome to Fresh Air. What are some of the risks in covering the cartels and the drug wars in your newspaper? What has happened to some of your reporters?
Well, we have become under siege by the drug lords and the cartels of the country. And the more that we expose their activities, the harder they push back. For example, recently, two reporters from our Monterrey paper a few months ago pursued a story. They had heard that a man running a Thai urethra shop in a nearby town was being shaken down for protection money, because this is how the drug rigs have been, quote, diversifying. And our reporter and photographer paid a visit to the town. Not 10 minutes after they had arrived, armored vehicles pulled up outside, blocking their exit. They were thrown to the ground, their laptops, their camera equipment, their phones, their ID with their addresses were all taken, and they were beaten. With broken eardrums, shoulders, ribs, they both were hospitalized and they both quit their jobs. And this is not the first time that such a thing has happened, and the criminals have made it plain. Unless we leave them alone, it will not be the last.
Well, how do you get people to cover the drug wars, given that their lives are in danger if they do?
Well, it's getting more and more difficult, and so we have to adjust. We have to make changes, and our lives are the worst for it. We can no longer run our reporters as bylines. We have to change their beats. We move them from homes to safer apartments. We vary routes to evade kidnappers, and our families cannot be habitual in their daily lives. And last year, for the second time in four decades, I had to move my entire family to a safe haven in the U.S.
The drug cartels in Mexico are famous, among other things, for buying people off. Cops, military, government people. What about journalists? Do you have to worry that your reporters might be bribed by the cartels?
Yes, this is a concern. And we have, for many years, run an education program that attempts to illustrate just our commitment to society. We cannot be in any kind of cooperation with the cartels in any way. And so we have to do our jobs. We have to be very clear about what conflicts of interest might arise. And, some people have quit their jobs because they feel it's dangerous. And but those that have stayed behind, the great, great majority, you know, are honest, they're diligent, and they believe that we have an important job to do. And if we don't do it, the truth is not going to be out. We have every reason in the world to drop the stories, and we have every reason to look the other way, but we have resolved to continue to report all we know about the problem and continue to ask questions. And we hold to the faith that if we ask enough of them, we might may finally come upon a solution. And what we know so far is like a conundrum. In Mexico, crime pays.
Would you give us a sense of the scope of the drug cartels in Mexico, how big they are, to what extent they've infiltrated mainstream institutions?
Well, this is a very worrisome statistic that we just heard recently from a credible U.S. source. There are about 450,000 people directly or indirectly linked to the drug trade in Mexico. One of the problems that we face is that the risk of being a criminal is very low in our country. Only about 5% of crimes are reported. Of that 5%, only 1 out of 6 victims press charges. And only one very unlucky criminal out of 100 will eventually go to jail.
Give us a sense of to what extent the cartels have infiltrated mainstream society, either through bribing people in powerful positions or having their own plants in powerful positions.
Yes, we have a very serious infiltration of this young democracy at the municipal, at the state and the federal level. And not only that, but we also have it in our judicial and legislative branches. And, for example, the mayoral elections that are coming up in the next weeks, we've heard of numerous cases where a well-dressed man shows up at the campaign office for the mayor. And, you know, he is well-dressed and a well-educated person. And he is carrying with him a suitcase full of money. And he is bringing good wishes for a successful political career. And at that time, the candidate has no choice. You know, we say plata o plomo, silver or lead. As mayor, he must collaborate. And at that moment, the fix is in. And so this is a situation that has caused a lot of potentially good people to refrain from participating in mayoral elections. We have cases in Ixtapan de la Sal, for example, where the mayor was shot and killed, and his stand-in replacement refused to accept the position because of the danger that is associated with such a position.
One of the great paradoxes of the drug wars in Mexico that have spilled over into the United States is that guns are very hard to get in Mexico because of pretty strict gun laws. And they're much easier to purchase in the United States. So a lot of the guns that are arming the cartels are actually coming across the border from the United States into Mexico. Talk about what impact you think the more liberal gun laws of the United States is having on violence in Mexico now.
Well, guns in Mexico are very, very difficult to acquire legally.
It sounds like it's one of the few institutions that's really working in Mexico now, is the strict gun laws.
Yes, and it cannot be done unless it is done through the army itself. However, the armament that is in the possession of the drug cartels, I would say 90% has come from the U.S., and it's understandable that you have liberal laws on this side of the border, and but the fact is that a great majority of those that are in Mexico are probably illegally in the country as a result of contraband, smuggling, whatever. And you can see a very large percentage of the gun dealers cater to the border towns in Mexico. And it's a disproportionate amount. So I would propose that perhaps it's worth looking into how the laws of the U.S. cannot be used against its own interests, which is to have a peaceful neighbor.
Are the cartels better armed than the police?
Frequently they are. The police is not particularly well-armed in our country. The military are better armed, and now the military has jumped into the battle as a result of President Calderon's insistence that they go out and help with this tremendous problem. And I would say that very frequently they are, not necessarily always. But when the army comes in to fight its side of the battle, they face the same problem that the U.S. Army faced in Iraq. Where do I point? Who do I shoot?
You know, in addition to the cartels using AK-47s and grenade launchers, they're also using more primitive tactics to scare people, gruesome things like beheadings, dissolving bodies in acid baths. Is that terrorizing the population?
It is, and it is having an impact on the levels of investment, and it is having an impact on the levels of job creations. It used to be that emigration from Mexico was only happening at the lower echelons of society, those without a job, those that wanted to find a way for a better life. And now we are beginning to see that happen in the top echelons of society, people that are fleeing the country, not because they don't have a job or they don't have a means to support themselves, but because they fear for their safety.
My guest is Alejandro Junco, publisher of a Mexican newspaper chain called Grupo Reforma. We'll talk about the Mexican drug cartels more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Alejandro Junco, and he publishes an influential chain of newspapers in Mexico, and we're talking about the impact of the drug cartels in Mexico. Have addiction levels in Mexico been increasing as the drug cartels have become more powerful and as they've increased the supply of drugs in Mexico?
Yes, that is a truism. More and more we are seeing the public health element become a bigger element, and one that is approaching the levels that probably exists in the U.S. And so this has created an internal market for drugs that at some point back in history, you know, Mexico was more like a pathway to the drugs that were being sold in the U.S. with no local consumption. But that has changed.
Last fall, President Calderon proposed decriminalizing possession of small quantities of cocaine and other drugs for addicts who agreed to undergo treatment. Why did he do that? What was the explanation for that proposal?
Well, I think that more and more people in Mexico are urging him to pull the ripcord. And what I mean by pulling the ripcord is, you know, the loss of our country. And we're running out of good ideas. And I'm certain that this may not be a good idea, but where are the others? And so even though it might be imperfect, I think that the thought behind this is to let some of the hot air out of the balloon so that we diminish the amount of illegal money that is being fed into this trade. And it's probably an imperfect solution, and one that I don't think is going to be popular, but we're running out of good ideas.
Well, the idea certainly didn't go over well in the United States. It was opposed in the United States. What impact did that have on Mexico? Was there pressure from the Bush administration or from Congress?
Well, no pressure needed, just inaction. You know, if the U.S. does not, you know, legalize its consumption of drugs, Mexico probably could not do it on its own. So it's going to require some soul searching to see if we can come up with some coordinated effort. But to make matters worse, I sometimes fear that even if consumption were to stop overnight in the U.S., that still would not accomplish what is needed in Mexico. The Merida Initiative, which is a plan to help Mexico combat the drug cartels.
This is a plan passed by Congress in the United States to give Mexico about $1.4 billion in equipment and training over the course of 3 years to help stem the drug wars.
Well, you know, I have heard arguments based on reason that even if that initiative were to be very successful and we were able to stop them cold, there are still other illegal activities that are very, very worrisome. We have the problem of kidnappings. We have the problem of piracy. We have the problem of extortions, of sale of protection. And these are problems that might even become more acute if the drug business were to dry up. So I think that it is not fair to say, well, the U.S. is to blame because it has this huge market. Well, even if it stopped tomorrow, it's not unthinkable that we would still have the violence and we would still have the lawlessness. And so I think we need to think hard about just what it is we're asking.
Some analysts think that Mexico is in danger of becoming a failed state. Do you think that that's extreme?
I hope it is. But we are seeing manifestations that are worrisome. For example, a feudalization where different parts of the country are essentially run by different drug cartels. We are seeing the infiltration of this young elected democracies. We are seeing this rule of law problems. And I just don't know what it takes to declare it a, quote, failed state. But certainly there are aspects of the operation of government in Mexico that are simply dysfunctional.
Hillary Clinton, who's the U.S. Secretary of State, will be in Mexico Wednesday and Thursday of this week. What do you expect that she'll be discussing in Mexico?
Well, it's very encouraging that she is there and that she has apparently made it a higher priority in the agenda that was true of the last administration. So I must say that that is encouraging. She probably will be taken to a lot of nice facilities and shown around in a proud manner. But she's an intelligent woman, and I think that it would be very interesting that she dig deep into some of the realities and some of the dilemmas that we are facing. And our problems might soon be your problems, and they are problems that I would not wish on anyone.
U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder called Mexico's drug trafficking organizations a national security threat to the U.S. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. I think that the problems are contagious and that we need to work on them jointly. There's a lot of ironies in this, even a certain dark humor to be found. I know that a few weeks ago, for example, an expert from the U.S. was invited to Saltillo, a city in North Eastern Mexico, to give a talk and to offer advice on how to keep ourselves safe from kidnappers. His lectures went well, but within hours of the last one, he was kidnapped. And there's founded fear we'll never see him again. So this is just one small example of things that are going on and that you know, could be multiplied if we don't stop this in time.
You've been publishing your chain of newspapers since 1973, and you took it over from your family. It was already run by your family. What were the big issues then? What were the stories that were most risky to cover back in 1973?
Well, at that time, we had to purchase our raw material, our newsprint, from the government. The manufacture and sale of newsprint was a monopolistic activity of the federal government. So you can imagine if at the height of the Watergate scandal, Mrs. Catherine Graham of the Washington Post had to buy her raw material from Richard Nixon, what might have happened?
Yes, there might have been newspaper paper shortages, huh?
as they were in our case.
Yes, we got nothing to sell, no paper left. Did you face that? Did they tell you there was no paper?
Absolutely. We faced this back in September of 1974. We were entering the eighth month of the year, and they had given us 17% of our allowed quota. And that same month, a new newspaper was born in our city, you know, with unlimited supply. So it didn't take bayonets and soldiers in the newsroom to get the government's point across. And so over the years, we faced many problems and controls, but nothing like the violence and the criminality that has us under siege today.
Alejandro Hunkel, thank you very much for talking with us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for your interest.
Alejandro Hunkel is the publisher of the Mexican newspaper chain Grupo Reforma. He'll give the commencement address at Columbia University this spring. We'll talk about how Mexican drug violence has spilled over into the U.S. in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.